Thank you.
Good afternoon. The Health and Human Services Finance Division will come to order. We have a quorum, and we have the minutes of February 26th before us. Could I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Representative Cantrell moves to approve the minutes of February 26th, 2019. I know everybody's read them over carefully. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes as written, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Thank you. The minutes, the motion prevails. The minutes are approved. So we are going to hear some bills today around the general topic of tobacco-related issues. And just so for members' orientation, it is our intention to lay these over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. The first bill today is House File 1058, Representative Halverson. Hello. And Representative Halverson is going to move that House File 1058 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division bill.
Thank you, Chair. That is my motion.
Okay. So, Representative Halverson, and your testifier, welcome to the committee, and just go ahead and make your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Today you're going to hear two bills that strive to invest more resources in reducing the number one cause of preventable death in the state of Minnesota, and that is tobacco use. Representative Mann's bill you'll hear next proposes to invest general fund dollars now to help current smokers quit. My bill is a little different. My bill seeks to address the problem with delinquent payments that the state is owed from cigarette companies and what the state should do with these delinquent payments if and when we receive those dollars. I first want to give you some background to put the bill into context. We have worked for a long time as a state to reduce rates of smoking in Minnesota and to make sure that people who do smoke and do have a tobacco addiction can get the resources that they need in order to quit, proven FDA-approved resources. As recently as 2014, Minnesota saw the lowest number of Minnesota high schoolers using tobacco products that we've ever seen, but we're losing ground rapidly. Just 3 years later, the Youth Tobacco Survey found that tobacco use had risen for the first time in nearly 20 years in our state. As an example, Minnesota high schoolers now use e-cigarettes on a regular basis. Nearly 40% have tried them. Think about that number of kids that represents in your districts or in your communities or in your own household. And meanwhile, smoking by adults is also taking a hit. We had been trending downward in tobacco use among adults for years, and we were far ahead of the national average of tobacco use, and now our progress has stalled. In addition, more e-cigarette users are people with no prior history of smoking. In 2018, 44% of e-cigarette users reported never smoking cigarettes, compared to 11.7% in 2014. And now nearly all young adults, that's 96.7%, report their usual e-cigarette is flavored. The reason is simple. The tobacco industry is relentless at targeting kids and keeping existing customers hooked. We know this because of the historic investment that Minnesota made with regard to the lawsuit against the tobacco companies many years ago. They had to open up their books. They had to open up their marketing tactics, and we saw firsthand that they are actively targeting kids, that they've been actively trying to get new customers hooked, and those new customers are people under the age of 18. So states and the country took action. We passed laws to change the way that cigarette marketing can be targeted. We changed regulation around how tobacco products are regulated. Enter e-cigarettes. Now we have a new product that is not subject to those same regulations, and they have exploited those loopholes dramatically. Juul is one of the most popular products on the market. And it's easy to conceal, and it's easy for kids and others to carry around with them. It also has an incredibly high content of nicotine. One Juul cartridge can contain as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes. The other thing to consider about e-cigarette products is that they are not safe, and they are not a quit smoking device. And that is really important for us to know, because people are going to want to tell you that it's safe, it's a better alternative. Let me tell you that cigarette companies have used that line for years. Remember light cigarettes? Not allowed to market those anymore, because it was an evasive tactic by the big tobacco companies. Remember when doctors preferred Camels? No, you're not allowed to do that anymore. And so trying to equate any type of tobacco use with healthy behavior is just simply wrong. We know that e-cigarette products are another tool to get people addicted to nicotine, and these are powerhouse nicotine products. That's why I'm encouraging our state to take action against tobacco companies that have not been paying their fair share. We had a settlement that was required to pay into perpetuity from the cigarette companies that have cost our state billions. That is a proven fact. We spend billions of dollars on health care costs every year because of the tobacco use of tobacco. And the CDC recommends that the state of Minnesota spend $53 million annually on cessation. And that is a drop in the bucket compared with what the tobacco companies spend marketing to people in our communities, especially children, especially communities of color, especially the LGBT community. Meanwhile, since 2015, tobacco companies that sell several popular brands, including Kool, Salem, and Winston, haven't paid Minnesota a dime. My bill states that if Minnesota is successful in recouping these fees from these tobacco companies, approximately $12 million a year would be used to fund ongoing tobacco control in our state. It's not enough. It's a drop in the bucket compared to what we face, but it's a start. Through the tobacco settlement, our state earned a historic victory against big tobacco. Every year that cigarette companies fail to pay the settlement is a broken promise to our kids, to the taxpayers of the state, and to those struggling with tobacco addiction. Tobacco control programs save money and lives, and it only makes sense to use the settlement dollars for this purpose. I urge the committee to support this legislation and dedicate new tobacco settlement fees to tobacco prevention. This upholds our promise to youth. With more context and background, I would like to introduce Molly Moylanen from Clearway, Minnesota.
All right. Thank you, Representative Halverson, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Molly Moylanen, and I represent Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Generation. We're a coalition of over 60 organizations working to save our youth from a lifetime of addiction
and
to tobacco.
Ms. Moylanen, if you could just pull the mic up a little bit.
Oh, absolutely.
It's kind of great difference. Thank
is that
you.
Better? So today is our annual day at the Capitol, and we have over 300 young people from every corner of the state here to ask their lawmakers to hashtag keep lungs loud. Specifically, we're asking legislators to increase the tobacco age to 21, include e-cigarettes in the Clean Indoor Air Act, and invest in cessation and prevention. And that's where House File 1058 and House File 350 come in. I also work for Clearway Minnesota, the nonprofit organization funded with 3% of the original tobacco settlement awarded to Minnesota in 1998. Since 2001, Clearway has helped smokers quit, we've funded innovative research, and we've led advocacy campaigns. But Clearway was created as a life-limited organization, and we will end by 2022. We are already in the process of closing down our programs, closing down our grants, and downsizing our staff. Representative Mann's bill, up next, will focus on funding cessation services because our biggest program, Quit Plan Services, will end next year. Now, as many of you might remember, the original settlement also dedicated money to health through a number of endowments, but those funds were quickly repurposed to fund budget deficits. So since then, Clearway has funded the majority of tobacco prevention and cessation activities in our state. And there's a handout in your packet that illustrates these declining investments. This bill is an opportunity for the state to pick up when Clearway leaves off. This new revenue source should help fulfill the promise of the settlement for our state's smokers and for those young people who can still be saved from the pain of addiction. New research has quantified the impact of our collective efforts. Last fall, Health Partners Institute conducted a modeling study that found that over the past 20 years, prevention and cessation work has prevented over 4,500 cancers in Minnesota, tens of thousands fewer of hospitalizations for respiratory, cardiovascular disease, and diabetes, and saved $5.1 billion. That's over $900 per Minnesotan in medical expenses and work productivity. Now, and we've also prevented over 4,000 smoking attributable deaths. And because the benefits of our efforts grow over time, these numbers will continue to increase as non-smokers, ex-smokers, and never-smokers live longer, healthier, and more productive lives in the future. The tobacco settlement was reached in part to compensate the state for the tremendous harms of tobacco use. These cigarette companies have shirked this responsibility, and if that wrong is righted, surely the best way to use this money is to help undo the damage they have done and help prevent the next generation of tobacco addiction. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moylan, and I appreciate it. So there is a, we have a couple of questions, but there is also an amendment in the packet, and I wonder is that yours, Representative Halverson? And do you want to move that and explain it, and we'll move that one before we take questions on the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, my apologies for jumping the gun. I would like to move the A1 amendment. It is a technical amendment that just clarifies language within the bill, and it would get the bill in the shape that I would like to pass it.
All right. Thank you, Representative Halverson. Is there any discussion to the amendment? Does everyone have it? It's the A1. It should be in your packets. All right. Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Okay. We have some questions from members. Representative Munson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Halverson. This is a great bill. Thank you for bringing it forward. I think we should be doing more to address the youth smoking, and this definitely will help with that. One of the concerns I have is that you have a co-author on the bill, Representative Freiberg, who's also authoring House File 420, which legalizes marijuana in Minnesota and allows for the development of, like, gummy bears and lollipops and stuff to have extremely high concentrations of THC, much like what you discussed with these Juul cartridges for vaping that have high concentrations of nicotine. Can the money that using in this program that you're asking for be used for the cessation of all kind of smoke-related products like the e-cigarettes you mentioned, also for marijuana and for these derivatives of marijuanas like gummy bears and lollipops that are being catered towards, you know, children? And the dabbing that we hear about is also kind of a trend where the kids in Colorado, where it's legal, are using the super highly concentrated THC. Would the money from the tobacco settlements be able to be used for prevention for marijuana products?
And I suppose the question would probably include and methamphetamines and opioids and anything else that might be a substance that a person could get become dependent on. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The dollars go directly to the tobacco prevention account, and that is will be a special revenue account that MMB will create, and its designation in the bill is that the Commissioner of Health is to dedicate that money for use for prevention activities surrounding tobacco use. So we're asking the manufacturers to pay for tobacco use in the state of Minnesota. And that is part of the settlement that we are part of. They're just violating the settlement, and that's why we're trying to figure out what to do with this money when we get it.
Representative Halverson, it spoke about the vaping and e-cigarettes, but that isn't tobacco, and that isn't, you know, from the tobacco companies doing. So you're using their settlement money to prevent another product that's not created by product by tobacco companies. Could it, why not marijuana that's being introduced this year?
Madam Chair and Representative, this actually e-cigarettes are actually defined as a tobacco product under our state law, and we tax it like tobacco and we regulate it like tobacco. The only thing we haven't done is regulate the clean indoor air standard in bars and restaurants, but that bill is coming.
Okay. And okay. Madam Chair, I just wanted clarification because the House File 420, which is one of your co-authors on this bill, is introducing that a legalized marijuana would also regulate and tax it just like tobacco. So I just wanted to see clarity. Would this money be able to be used to prevent marijuana use?
I think we got the answer to that. Thank you. Representative Acomb.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Halverson, for bringing this forward, and Ms. Moylan for being here today. As a former smoker myself, I certainly understand and recognize the tie that tobacco has on people, and so I appreciate the efforts that we can implement to break that. And so I have a question. You're talking about the tobacco settlement violations for a few different brands of cigarettes, Kool's, Salem's, and Winston. So if they're not paying what they're supposed to be paying, can we prevent them from being sold in our state?
Interesting question. I will defer to Ms. Moylan if she has an idea. It's an intriguing, you raise an intriguing question.
Just a thought.
Ms. Moylan, you want to tackle that?
Madam Chair and Representative Acomb, thank you. You could look into that and you could pursue that. You know, this bill does not go that far. This is a dispute that's currently under litigation between a few tobacco companies themselves, and the AG is taking action on that. But in terms of how you would, I think once that dispute is settled, then you could decide how to move forward with that. But this is it's under current litigation, so maybe not at the moment, but it's a good idea. We'll talk.
Okay. Thank you.
It is a good idea.
All right. So, Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my apologies that I came in late to your presentation, Representative Halverson. As I read the bill, it takes all of the money from the tobacco settlement payments each year into a special fund and then appropriates $12 million out for cessation efforts annually. Last year, I think we took in close to $160 million in funds. So I'm just wondering, it won't take long before this gets to be a pretty large amount of money, and I'm just trying to figure out if I'm understanding the bill correctly, and if so, what happens as that amount begins to grow?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair and Representative Zerwas, I can improve your understanding of the bill a bit. It's not all of the tobacco settlement proceeds. Unfortunately, those proceeds had been used for to settle budget issues for the state of Minnesota many years ago. This is for the delinquent proceeds, those that have been building up that these particular companies who are in having a dispute about who pays what have not paid to the state of Minnesota. So it takes a portion of that.
Yeah, Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair, I guess to the author, do we know what was that amount in 19? What was that amount in 18? Can you give us some of that information?
And just Representative Zerwas, I was going to, and I don't know if you could please, you can go ahead and answer, but I was going to ask Mr. Berg to give us a little background as well.
Whomever, yeah.
And your question's really apropos because I was, we were kind of talking about whether he could do that, because there is sort of a common misconception about where this money is going and so on. Mr. Berg, could you give us that little quick
Madam Chair, members, I frequently get this question related to how much of the tobacco settlement proceeds the state currently dedicates to tobacco cessation, and the answer is none. Now, the issue, the state gets a annual payment, which is unrestricted revenue to the general fund, currently is, I think, about $160 million. It's a declining revenue source. By the end of the forecast period, 23, I think it gets down to around $140 million. That's missing the revenue from the companies that Representative Halverson's bill is looking at. I have heard that that's estimated at 12 to 15 million a year, but I don't have any way to back that up. And and that's as far as I can go. What we spend on tobacco cessation is, in as it was pointed out on this chart that that was passed out, there's some SHIP funding and there's some tobacco-free communities grants, but Clearway is separate from the state budget and was provided for in the legal settlement, and their money does not flow through the state budget. No other money the state gets from the settlement is dedicated to smoking cessation.
And Mr. Burke, has it been that way ever since the settlement was reached?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure of the answer to that. There used to be more part. We used to have the tobacco endowments, they were called. There were three tobacco endowments, one of which I think did spend some money on. There was one related to health, and the university got money. I think some of that went to the tobacco cessation, but the state cashed those endowments in years ago.
Okay. Representative Zerwas, did you want to follow up on that?
Well, I think that's very helpful, and I appreciate the additional information. If we're looking for money from arrears to fund this, what happens if the money doesn't come? I mean, what if they continue to not pay?
Well, and go ahead, Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Zerwas. Our number one hope is that they pay and that our Attorney General can get the settlement. If they don't, this is an if situation. It's an if-then. So that is what the language of the bill does. If that money comes in, we're going to spend it to make sure that we can help people quit smoking.
Right. And thank you. And I would just add to that, Representative Ross, we always, you know, we always have our state budget that we have to make determinations and set priorities about what we ought to be funding. And I think we probably all agree on this committee that, you know, funding to prevent people from getting hooked on nicotine is money well spent, and that whatever treatment we can do is also money well spent with regard to the health of our citizens and our long-term HHS budget as well. Other questions from members or comments from members? Okay, very good. And could I just ask the people in the room, how many of you are here for what's the name of your day, Tobacco Cessation Day, or?
Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Generation.
Oh, Smoke-Free Generation. How many of you are here with that group? Oh, that's fantastic. Yep. Wonderful. Welcome. Thank you for your advocacy. And so if there's no more discussion on this bill, then House File, Representative Halverson renews her motion that House File 1058 be, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in our division bill. So that will be done. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I would, if I may, Ms. Moylan brought a visual aid that I would love to pass around as we hear Representative Mann's bill. When I talk about using cartoon characters and the way they market to kids, this is a product. It's an e-cigarette juice product called Unicorn Drops. Use your imagination what they're trying to get at there. But take a look at this packaging and tell me what your kid would do if they saw this.
Later. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And please hand that around. It can go around during the next presentation. Okay. So next we're going to hear House File 350, Representative Mann. And Representative Mann is going to move that House File 350 be laid over for possible inclusion in our division bill.
Correct. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
So Representative Mann, go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, representatives, for your time today, and thank you to the co-authors of this bill that sit on this committee, including Chair Moran, Representative Schumacher, Representative Olson, Representative Schultz, Representative Zerwas, and Representative Loeffler. So what this bill does is it provides funding for tobacco cessation services in the state of Minnesota by providing funding to the Department of Health to operate these services and ensure the continued quality of these services. QuitPlan, which is the service we currently have, will cease to exist, like you heard previously, in 2020. And that is where this bill comes in to pick that up, to continue the service to all Minnesotans. If we do not pass this bill this session, we are going to be the only state in the country without such a service. As a physician, I watch many of my patients struggle with tobacco addiction. Tobacco addiction is aggressive, and tobacco remains one of the leading causes of death and disease, killing over 1,000 people per day in this country. It also costs Minnesotans over $7 billion in both health care costs and loss of productivity. We know that helping people quit smoking saves money, but most importantly, it saves lives. There exist proven methods to help people quit, and this proposal will make it so that all Minnesotans will continue to have access to that support. Per Madam Chair's request to all members of this committee, I did look at the results first, and they do have a part just on tobacco quit lines. And the information there backs up what we're saying, in that essentially helping people quit smoking saves a lot of money. Thank you for your consideration. I urge you to move this forward so that Minnesota is not the only state without this extremely important service. And next, I'd like to call up our testifiers.
All right. Thank you, Representative Mann. We have testifiers. Please come down. Emily Myatt and Jessica Hassour?
Wrong bill.
Hassour? No, wrong bill? Okay, sorry. I'm sorry. Okay. Dr. Beckler. Okay, welcome to the committee. Please just state your name for the record and go ahead and give us your testimony.
Greeting, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Courtney Jordan Beckler. I'm a practicing cardiologist and assistant commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Health. Minnesota Department of Health is excited about the opportunity to operate a statewide quit line and promotion activities. The governor has recommended $4.5 million in his biannual budget and recognizes the importance of having a statewide tobacco cessation quit line for improving community health, addressing health equity, and reducing tobacco-related health care costs. Without state funding, as you heard, Minnesota will be the only state in the nation without a quit line. Every state administers a quit line with cessation counseling and other supports for people who are interested in quitting. In 48 states, it's the health department who operates it. Until now, Clearway Minnesota has run the quit line with funding from the tobacco settlement proceeds. They're preparing to sunset in 2023 and close down the quit plan services in 2020. This is of urgent need. As a practicing cardiologist, I know firsthand the devastating impact of tobacco on my patients, their families, and our communities. Tobacco continues to be the number one cause of preventable disease for our state. Minnesotans continue to experience the side effects of tobacco in cancer, heart disease, asthma, diabetes, and COPD. A statewide quit line and public awareness activities are truly essential public health services and part of one Minnesota to ensure that all Minnesotans have the opportunity to live a healthy life. The Minnesota Department of Health will assume responsibility and is prepared to launch a new statewide quit line by March 2020. With almost 600,000 Minnesotans still smoking at a cost of over $3 billion in avoidable health care costs, this is critical for our state. Recognizing the disparities we see in tobacco use in both American Indian communities, in which the smoking rate is 59%, and behavioral health populations, where the smoking rate is near 30%, we intend to have specialized quit line support for these populations depending on funding levels. Cessation is a vital component to tobacco control, and we will ensure that all Minnesotans have access to needed counseling and nicotine replacement therapies. Someone trying to quit on their own has a success rate of 9 to 12%. Counseling and medications increases their overall success rate to nearly 32%. In addition to the adults who smoke cigarettes, we are experiencing an epidemic of youth and young adult e-cigarette use. Both the number of young adults 18 to 24 and the number of high school e-cigarette users doubled in the last 3 years. As a mother, this is unacceptable to me. It's essential that these users have access to cessation support and services. The Quitline will also be available to provide texting, email, and other services to youth under 18 and the full array of services to those over 18. I want to thank you in advance for support in this effort. For those of you who have ever had the unfortunate experience of someone trying to get their very last breath when we simply cannot turn the oxygen level up higher, this is an avoidable situation. With your support, we have the opportunity to impact the health of Minnesota today and for generations to come. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. We do have one question, and then we do have another testifier as well, but Representative Munson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the testifier, Dr. Beckler?
Beckler.
From any of the research you've seen for cessation programs, is there any programs that are working towards cessation for youth with marijuana in states that have legalized
Representative Munson, this is not a hearing on marijuana. Could we please stick to the topic?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm just concerned that we're trying to prevent tobacco use for youth, and especially with products like e-cigarettes and these derivatives of tobacco. And at the same time, you're hearing bills this year on allowing a new product. And I'm wondering if we could have just expand the cessation services to include, you know, other forms of, you know, smokable, whether it's a e-cigarette, vaping nicotine or vaping THC, or I'm just curious.
Well, you could ask that question, but we haven't heard any of those other bills yet, and if we do hear them, there'll be ample time to talk about those issues. But
okay,
if the witness wants to answer the question.
I appreciate your concerns. Right now, that's not how these efforts are set up.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, thank you for your testimony, and please stay around in case there are more questions. So we have Amanda Jansen. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, my name is Amanda Jansen. I work for Clearway Minnesota. I'm also here on behalf of Minnesotans for Smoke-Free Generation Coalition on our day at the Capitol. So I would like to thank Representative Mann for championing this proposal and her many co-authors for their support. I also want to thank Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan for including funding for this important work in their budget. So as you heard earlier, Clearway Minnesota is an independent nonprofit organization funded with 3% of the tobacco settlement. We were established as a life-limited organization that will go out of existence by the end of 2022. So for 18 years, we have operated Quitline services. These are effective, science-based programs that give Minnesota tobacco users free tools to quit. Quitline services includes phone counseling, medications, emails, text messages, and self-help materials. Quitline has provided over 185,000 Minnesotans with the help they need to quit. Last year alone, 15,000 Minnesotans enrolled in the program. Even more tobacco users look to us as a basic resource for information on quitting. Over 325,000 Minnesotans contacted us for information on smoking cessation last year alone. But as I said, we are life limited and the wind down of our organization is well underway. Quitline will end in just over a year. So this bill provides funding to ensure that Minnesota's commitment to helping smokers continues after Quitline services ends. As you've heard many times, all other states provide these services, and we should not be the only state to not provide these services. Smoking still takes a tremendous toll on lives and money. Each year in Minnesota alone, it takes the lives of over 6,000 Minnesotans, and it costs each of us about $593 per Minnesotan, whether you're a smoker or not. So over the last 20 years, Minnesota has seen great progress in reducing youth and adult smoking overall, but high rates persist in vulnerable populations. We also know that nearly 600,000 Minnesotans still smoke and that most of them do want to quit. So the good news is helping people quit is one of the most cost-effective health services. Research shows that the cost of a smoking cessation program can be fully offset in 3 years. It's been our honor to help people quit commercial tobacco through Quitline services, and now it's truly in Minnesotans' best interest for this work to continue because it saves money and lives. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. I have questions from, please stay, because I don't know who the questions are for, Representative Cantrell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, to Dr. Mann and the testifier. I just want to say thank you so much for the work that you're doing, and thank you so much for bringing this bill to our committee. I have a couple grandparents who are living with emphysema as a result of lifelong smoking, and seeing them struggle is hard. And anything that we can do as a state to prevent future generations of Minnesotans from having to struggle with those health difficulties, whatever they may be, emphysema, lung cancer, any other type of illness related to tobacco dependency, I think is a step that is not only going to be cost-saving and cost-effective, but I think it's going to save lives. So I want to thank you again, Dr. Mann, for bringing this bill to our committee.
All right. Thank you, Dr. I don't know if that's a promotion or not. I guess we'll have to decide. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, good bill. Thank you, Representative Mann, for bringing this forward. You brought up a number of 15,000 sign up. I'm curious, how long does a typical person stay with the program? Is there a length of time? And can you just kind of tell me a little bit about that? Thank you.
Ms. Jansen.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative. So it varies. So our services, we have many different options. So phone counseling, for example, you might have four different phone calls over maybe a month period, and that would include medications that maybe would last you 4 or 8 weeks. An email program, you could have that anytime over a year, or the texting program, the same thing. The self-help materials, you could use indefinitely. So the way that our services are designed is to really let, we recognize that quitting is hard and it's individualized. So it lets a current tobacco user use whatever combination of services they want to really support them in that quit attempt, whether it's I need this for a month or I need someone to email me every week for a year.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, we all have that personal story. I had a dear friend who lost his battle with cancer, and he was a lifelong smoker, and so very near and dear to us. My question is, when I was a kid and we'd have these programs, we would have individuals would come in, they would share with us the black lungs, if you will. They would. We had this man that would come in and he would speak to us as kids. He'd use this vibrating microphone, share with us the visual as far as the how he'd breathe through his neck, etc. My question is with vaping and e-cigarettes, does it have that effect? I mean, will there be visuals like that could be shared also? Because that had a profound effect on me as well.
Ms. Jansen?
Yeah. Madam Chair and Representative, that's a really great question. With e-cigarettes, because they are so new, we are still learning. Every day we learn something new about it. Weekly, daily, there's new research that comes out about the harm of e-cigarettes. We know that it's not, when they first just came out, people were saying it was just water vapor that was coming off of the end of it. Now we know that there's heavy metals and formaldehyde and other carcinogens that are actually in that e-cigarette. So I fear that, you know, in the future, we could start to see some of those things, but they haven't been around long enough for us to actually look. I will say, though, that some of the programs that you're talking about, the educational campaigns with youth, we have a lot of partners that are going around the state that are doing those educational campaigns and raising awareness among teachers and parents and kids to try to make sure that people know these are tobacco product. They are addictive. This is nicotine in there. It's not just mango water. So there's a lot of that happening, but a lot of the science is still out on them.
Thank you, Madam.
All right. Representative Neuer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much, Vice Chair, man, for bringing this bill forward. I see this as a social justice issue. As we know, there are so many people of color and indigenous who are impacted the most. This major, you know, big companies are targeting minorities and people of color. So the question to you is, including people with limited English proficiency who may not benefit from some of the services that we may offer, how are we tackling that? How are we addressing that issue to make sure that this is a social justice issue that we can help address the disparities that exist?
Ms. Jansen.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative, that's a fantastic question. And we share your concern at looking at who are the different Minnesotans who are being targeted by big tobacco and are using tobacco at higher rates. So QuitPlan services, a lot of our services are offered in multiple languages. So we have interpreter services. We have our QuitPlan.com website is actually fully in English and Spanish, which is one way that we can adapt that as well. So we really work hard to do a lot of our materials and that kind of thing in different languages. We also have in the past partnered with different community organizations who really work within the communities who that you're speaking of and ask them, how can we work with you to make sure that your communities are supported in their quitting efforts, recognizing that that might look different and you might need some other communications or other materials that might make that quitting journey easier and adaptive to those different communities.
Representative Neuer.
Another follow-up question. We have seen, the targeting of people with mental illness, mm-hmm. which is separate from the group that I just mentioned. How are we addressing that? Because this is an issue of, public health issue, especially individuals with mental illness.
Yeah.
So can you speak to that?
Yeah. Ms. Jansen.
Yeah. Madam Chair and Representative, we actually have a special protocol, if you will, at QuitPlan Services for people living with mental illness. So it includes counselors when you would call in who are trained in that specific piece. It might include more medications or different medications or combination of medications, but we have a specific program for that population, recognizing exactly what you say. We know that people living with mental illness are much more likely to use tobacco than the general population. We also have a similar program we have an American Indian quit line, again, with that same understanding. We also have one for pregnant women. So we look at different populations and the vendor that we work with can look at how to serve them differently based on the population.
Thank you,
Madam. Thank you, Representative Neuer. And Ms. Jansen, since she's, the old organization, the one that's going away, and the new one that's coming in, is any of what you've said going to be different? Maybe we should get Dr. Beckler back because, since we're transitioning here and that's what the bill is about,
yeah.
I can only imagine that the sorts of things you've said are going to carry over and continue. Yeah, Dr. Beckler, thanks for coming back to the table. Do you want to address any of what Representative Neuer was asking about how we're going to address special needs for special populations, whether it's ethnic minorities, maybe with limited English skills, or yeah. in particular people with mental illness who are using tobacco at higher rates?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. So, again, we will be continuing ongoing efforts that are specifically targeted towards American Indians and also folks with behavioral special needs or mental health challenges. So, and we also will be looking at data going onwards like we do within the Department of Health from a culturally relevant and fashion to make sure that we're addressing needs and disparities that we're seeing in an ongoing way.
All right. Thank you very much. Representative Munson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be nice this time. I was surprised to hear Representative Neuer talk about this, maybe some racial inequalities in tobacco use. I guess I had surprised to hear that maybe more minorities are using tobacco than non-minority. Is that true? And you do have programs that specifically target certain races?
Yes.
Dr. Beckler.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative, yes, that is true. In essentially every ethnic population, there's higher rates of tobacco use than Caucasians. So we do specifically target those populations because they've also been targeted, unfortunately, by tobacco companies. So we're now trying to help from a cessation and prevention perspective in ways that make the most sense to that community.
And I have a question, Dr. Beckler, since mm-hmm. you're back. Talk about nicotine as being highly addictive. Can you give us a sense of how addictive it is compared to other things that we think of as being addictive? Even though this has been a legal product, and when we hear about kind of even with really good help, the quit rate is really not, we'd like to see a 90% quit rate, and that's not what we see. Can you kind of just discuss that a little bit?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Yeah, unfortunately, it's one of the most addictive substances that we see as more powerful than cocaine from that perspective. And so it really is truly unbelievable that it's still legal from my perspective in this country. But it's a challenge that it's folks really struggle once they start.
Okay, more powerful than cocaine. That's really saying something. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, thanks for bringing this bill forward. The I was actually addicted to cigarettes for when I was in the Marine Corps and prior going into the Marine Corps. And, of course, that was the only thing to do for, in some cases in boot camp, was to have a cigarette. But I just noticed in line 2.4, we don't have any fiscal dollar amount put in there. This is a finance committee. Is that coming?
I'm going to need to defer. It's because it's in the governor's, excuse me, Madam Chair and Representative. It doesn't have a fiscal note because it's included in the governor's budget this time. That's my understanding.
Madam Chair?
Yeah, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. What amount is that about?
Madam Chair, Representative, it's $4.5 million in total.
Okay.
In the biennium. I'm asking that, Representative Grunhagen, because... And so let me just ask Dr. Beckler, is that, so you are a work for the Department of Health, so the, and this is a bill that would fund the Department of Health to continue these programs. So, you know, just to be clear, the amount that the request is from the department is what the governor's budget presents to us, right? So it's not like some other group is out there asking for more, asking for a different number. This is the request, the $4.5 million. And was that did you say that was per year or for the biennium?
Madam Chair, that is correct in that's the total request, and that's per biennium.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you for clarifying that, Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, is there anyone else in the audience who wants to testify in support of the bill or with concerns about the bill? Yeah, please come forward. Welcome to the committee. If you would just give us your name and if you represent somebody who that is, and then go ahead and make your statement.
Sure. My name is Elizabeth Bangard. I'm just an average citizen. Don't represent anyone. I am in support of services like this. My concern is I was doing a little bit of research about this, and it came to my attention that the attorney who the state hired to help with Blue Cross Blue Shield's lawsuit in the 90s actually was paid his over $400 million in 2 years as part of the settlement. So I'm curious why, when we as a state go after things, the terms were 25 years of the settlement, and now we as a state aren't getting our money, and now we as taxpayers are going to fund these services. So, I mean, we're talking about Michael Cerisi getting $400 to $500 million in 2 years, and then he just walked away. And so it's concerning that now we have to step in, to me. And again, I'm in support of these things. I mean, I have grandparents who passed away from it, but yikes.
All right. Well, thank you. That's kind of not before our committee right now. It happened a number of years ago, and I don't think any of us were even here then. I know I was not. So, and I think I've been here about as long as anybody on the committee, right with Representative Wappler. So, okay. Is there anyone else who wanted to testify for or with concerns about the bill? Okay, not seeing anyone. So with that, thank you very much, Representative Mann. With that, Representative Mann will renew her motion that House File 350 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And next we will hear House File 940, Representative Cantrell. And let's see here. So Representative Cantrell will move that House Bill 940 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division bill. And welcome to the committee. Please go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. It's a privilege to testify before you again. Today I'm introducing House File 940, and I want to start off by thanking Representative Zerwas for his work on this Palliative Care Advisory Council legislation in 2017, which is when the Palliative Care Advisory Council was established in the state of Minnesota. What House File 940 does is it renews an appropriation in the amount of $44,000 in fiscal year 2020 and $44,000 in fiscal year 2021 so that the Palliative Care Advisory Council can continue its essential work. I just want to start off really quick here, kind of going into the details about what is palliative care. Palliative care is about improving the quality of life by treating the person, not just, well, in addition to the disease that the person is suffering from. It is most often and most effectively implemented as a team-based approach to the care of the patient, and it provides an extra layer of support in relieving pain and the symptoms of illness, as well as the stress that comes from serious illness. It helps both the patient and the family and is appropriate for any age at any stage of illness. We in Minnesota, although we provide the world's best medical care, still have a lot of progress that we need to make in the area of palliative care. As identified in the Palliative Care Advisory Council's previous report from the last year, only about 61% of Minnesota hospitals currently offer palliative care resources, which is only slightly better than the national average of 59%. As I said, in 2017, our legislature recognized the importance of palliative care in the holistic healthcare delivery to all patients. And the purpose of this council the purpose of this council is to improve the quality and delivery of this patient-centered care in our state. The council is made up of a variety of professionals who have palliative care work experience and expertise in palliative care delivery models. They come from a variety of inpatient, outpatient, and community settings, such as long-term care, or hospice. And they are appointed by the Commissioner of Health and volunteer their time to participate on this council. The council must assess the availability of palliative care in the state of Minnesota, and its mission is to analyze barriers to greater access to palliative care and make recommendations for legislative action. Since they were established, they have submitted two legislative reports, which they have to submit, I believe, by February 15th of each year. And the chair of the council will testify in a moment, once I'm done introducing the bill, to outline more of the work that the council has been doing. The issue of palliative care is particularly personal to me. In 2017, I underwent several months of chemotherapy for stage 2 Hodgkin's lymphoma. And it was because of the excellent high-quality care, which included many dimensions of palliative care, that I believe I was able to not only survive my condition, but also survive nearly losing my life in October for a nearly fatal reaction to one of my chemotherapy drugs. I know firsthand how much of a difference palliative care makes in someone's life. It's the reason why I'm here testifying on this bill today. Excuse me. And just as a quick shout out, I want to thank everyone at the St. Francis Cancer Center for everything you've done. My story is one of many across our state, where patients realize that palliative care can do so much more if we could only improve access and understanding about it. I want to make sure that all Minnesotans living with serious illness have access to a palliative care team or a palliative care specialist. And I want them to know how to ask and when to ask for palliative care support services. I want folks in greater Minnesota to have the same access to palliative care that many in the Twin Cities, including myself, or Rochester receive. I want to help Minnesotans understand that palliative care is not something that you only get when there's no more hope of treatment. And I do want to identify, too, that palliative care is oftentimes mistaken as being synonymous with hospice care. And while palliative care is an essential component of high-quality end-of-life care, really the mission of palliative care is to ease the tremendous burden of living with a serious or chronic illness and the various factors that I've previously outlined related to that. So I please ask for your support for House File 940. I'd now like to turn the presentation over to Emily Myatt from the American Cancer Society and Cancer Action Network, who will share a little bit more about palliative care and the work being done in Minnesota. And I thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Cantrell. And I do want to say that we, I did see that the report came out from the group, and we really should have given that to members. I mean, it is a little bit long, but we will distribute the link to the report because it is actually a very impressive report. I took a quick look through it, and it does lay out a lot of these issues, and it was really quite impressive. So we will circulate that to members. So welcome to the committee. Are you Ms. Myatt?
I am.
All right. Please say your name for the record and go ahead.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Emily Myatt, and I'm the Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, the nonpartisan nonprofit advocacy affiliate of the American Cancer Society. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 940, legislation to continue funding for the Minnesota Palliative Care Advisory Council. And I want to thank Representative Cantrell for his leadership on this issue and for sharing his story. The American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network helped to establish the Palliative Care Advisory Council in 2017 and is championing the bill before you today because from the moment a patient hears the words you have cancer, through survivorship they cope with pain, stress, and side effects from treatment. Palliative care is a way to improve a patient and family's quality of life. As Representative Cantrell stated, palliative care is specialized medical care focused on providing relief from symptoms and the stress of a serious illness. It's provided by a specially trained team of doctors, nurses, and other specialists who work with the patient's other doctors to provide an extra layer of support and to improve patient quality of life. It is appropriate at any age and at any stage of a serious illness. It can be provided alongside with curative treatment. Palliative care has been shown to decrease readmissions, lengths of stay in the ICU, and deaths in the hospital, and to increase patient and family satisfaction. It perfectly meets the goals of a quadruple aim: better health, lower costs, better experience, and improved clinician job satisfaction. Palliative care treats the patient, not just the disease. I've heard about the palliative care experience, or lack of experience, from grassroots advocates across the state. Those who were fortunate enough to have access to this type of care had said what a difference palliative care made during their or their loved one's cancer journey. But many of my advocates tell the opposite story: countless trips to the ER, unmanaged pain and symptoms, and a lack of support for the patients and their family. They would have greatly benefited from access to palliative care. By supporting additional funding for the Palliative Care Advisory Council, you're putting patient quality of life first and helping our state meet the changing needs of Minnesotans, whether aging or pediatric. I'm now going to turn it over to Jessica Haushauer, the chair of the Palliative Care Advisory Council.
All right. Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Haushauer, and I am chair of the Minnesota Palliative Care Advisory Council. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you today to represent the council and to update you on our work. The council is composed of 19 members from a range of professional and personal backgrounds, including caregivers. And I represent a caregiver position on the council, having cared for my father, who died of lung cancer about 5 years ago. Council members volunteer their time to improve the state of palliative care across Minnesota. And our vision is that all Minnesotans have access to high-quality palliative care across populations, care settings, and geography. The council is tasked with three things. We assess the availability of palliative care across the state, we analyze barriers, and we make recommendations for legislative action. The council held its first meeting in November of 2017, and in the 16 months that the council has been up and running, we've met 10 times, and we have work groups meeting in between full council meetings. In early 2018, the council partnered with the Minnesota Cancer Alliance, the Pediatric Palliative Care Coalition of Minnesota, Minnesota Network of Hospice and Palliative Care, and the University of Minnesota's Community Health Initiative to do a pediatric palliative care assessment. We found that there are rural access gaps to pediatric palliative care, and the report made recommendations for education and training. In April of 2018, the council participated in a day-long retreat where we identified seven core focus areas that lay the foundation for our work moving forward. Those core focus areas include access for all, awareness, education and training, policy, research data and metrics, reimbursement, sustainability and delivery models, and standards of practice. So we currently have six active work groups around those core focus areas. As mentioned, the council has produced two legislative reports. Our 2018 report focused on the availability across hospital settings in Minnesota of palliative care. We identified the number of palliative trained or certified physicians and nurses across the state, and we looked at public awareness of palliative care. Our 2019 report dives deeper into those seven core focus areas and provides considerations for lawmakers moving forward on a range of topics, including the need to balance opioid policy with supporting quality palliative care for individuals living with serious illness and life-limiting disease. So the $44,000 that's been requested will continue to allow the council to build on that foundation that we've created, and we'll continue to refine our recommendations, engage stakeholders, and ensure that our recommendations are based on the best evidence and rooted in best practices. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And could I just ask Ms. Hussauer, was this, or maybe for the author, I think this was in the bill that got vetoed last year, am I correct? No? Okay, maybe not. Representative Zerwas, did you have a comment on that? Because I know maybe we just heard the bill the last time when we did the original council.
Madam Chair, I think as I recall, I had the bill 2 years ago when the council was established and first funded. It was set up for a two-year biannual funding, so this will be the bill's first time coming back for additional funding would be the route of this.
All right. Thank you. I guess that's why I remember it, because I remember when we had the hearing the last time. And as I say, I did look at the report, and I was really quite impressed with what the council was able to accomplish in the 2 years. So I think it's been a very successful first effort. All right. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify in favor of or with concerns about the bill? All right, seeing none and seeing no questions from members, we all appreciate your being here. And House File 940 is laid over for possible inclusion in the division bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, so members, tomorrow we will be hearing House File 400. And also the bill, I don't know the number here, but on the outpatient drug rule. So, I'm giving you the gift of about 25 extra minutes, which is a rare thing around here, but we're going to adjourn a little bit early. So we are adjourned.